Live and direct from Stuck Between Studios, right here in Brooklyn, New York. It's Exit 12 on the road to Shambhala. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. What a show we have got for you. We'll kick things off with a little tribute to former Orioles second baseman Roberto Alomar, who received some upsetting news from the Baseball Writers Association of America today. We'll tell you all about it and how it is related to the gradual disintegration of my own personal childhood. Maybe yours too, but probably not. But maybe, but probably not. What else do we have? The Search for Delicious, back this week as the Lou and I engage in a little bit more reminiscing, this time about the legacy of a certain venerated writer of nonsense whose name may or may not rhyme with Bold Spall. That's the best I could come up with right now, ladies and gentlemen. Bold Spall, but I think you probably know who I'm talking about. After that, Vital Topics. Our panel of distinguished experts will share their New Year's resolutions with you. I think you will find it incredibly inspiring. Not because of our resolve, but rather because of our lack thereof. Actually, I'm just talking about myself there. Everybody else has really good ideas. So, that is what we have on the program today. Plus, of course, a closing salvo. Can a salvo be close? Yeah, I guess parting salvo. Okay, Boswell's going to give you one of those. And we've got very special treat for you, the music of Mr. Matt Singer, Brooklyn-based singer-songwriter, whose EP we will be playing some songs from. The EP is called The Drought. And with all of that in mind, I think it is time to begin the program. So thank you so much for tuning in to Exit 12 on the road to Shambhala. It begins right now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you're aware of this, or if you follow such things, but today the Baseball Writers Association of America held their annual vote to see who would be inducted into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame this coming July. And eligible for the first time was a second baseman named Roberto Alomar, who did a brief tour of duty with my beloved Baltimore Orioles. Now, this was no ordinary tour of duty with the Baltimore Orioles, because he played for them the last time that they had a winning season, that being 1997. That is, you are correct, 13 goddamn years ago, but that's not the point here. The point is, Roberto Alomar, though he brought the Orioles victories on the field, also coincided with the gradual dismantling of my childhood dreams. Allow me to explain. Whilst playing for the Orioles in this 1997 season, Roberto Alomar did a thing that was classless even for a Major League Baseball player, which we all know is a pretty low bar to clear. Specifically, there was an umpire named John Hirschbeck, whose son had just died in some particularly tragic manner. And he had soldiered on and continued umpiring. So he made a call on the field that Roberto Alomar didn't like. Roberto Alomar's response to this was to spit in John Hirschbeck's eye on national television. Not the most classy thing to do, we can all agree. Despite the fact that the Orioles were in first place from the first day of that season until the last day of that season and won the American League Division Series, at the conclusion of the year, Peter Angelos, the team's owner, decided that Roberto Alomar was not fit to be an Oriole and did not re-sign him or traded him. I can't remember which it was. And also fired the manager. So what the Orioles did is they went instantly from being a team that was the favorite to repeat as the division champions to one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, a tradition which continues to this day. We got big hopes for 2010, but we're not talking about that right now. So, coincidental with this time of prominence for the real Orioles was my time of prominence as the manager of the fake Orioles, namely the Baltimore Orioles baseball team in the 1993 edition of Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball for the Super Nintendo, wherein I believe I won 140 games in my fake 162-game season. I believe Mike Mussina won 32 of those games and struck out something like 468 batters. The thing that was amazing about Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball, besides my incredible abilities, was the fact that they had paid for Ken Griffey, the rights to use Ken Griffey Jr.'s name, and they had paid for the rights to use the names of all the real Major League Baseball teams. What they had not paid for the rights for was the use of any other Major League Baseball player's name. So you had Ken Griffey Jr., and then everybody else had a name like Robbie Smash or Zinger Jefferson. And the thing that was hilarious was that though they all had fake names, they were all the real players. Their abilities corresponded to their real-life counterparts, and their stats, the preloaded stats, matched the actual stats of each player from 1993. So if you were a resourceful young man like me, it was very easy, albeit time-consuming, for you to take a book which had all of the stats for every single major league player in the 1993 season, and painstakingly go through team by team and re-enter each name so that it matched the actual real-life player. At this time in my life, this was probably the greatest thing that I had ever achieved. The day that I finished the last player, I'll go ahead and say it. I was more proud of that than anything I've done ever since. So, flash forward to 2004. I am sitting in my boxer shorts on the floor of a very grungy two-bedroom apartment in Queens with my roommate, Mr. Ben Maston, my good friend to this day. And we are playing Ken Griffey Jr.'s Major League Baseball. And we've moved to New York because both of us have dreams of becoming famous professional actors, professional comedians, professional writers. And the way that we are going after this dream is to sit in our underwear in our apartment and split a giant pizza and play an 11-year-old Super Nintendo game. So there comes a point in the game where Ben gets very upset about a glitch that happened in the game. He feels that a runner was safe when they were called out or something of this nature. And he rips the controller by accident out of the front of the Super Nintendo console, causing the game to freeze, causing the animated umpire to start saying over and over again, "You're out, you're out, you're out, you're out, you're out." And Ben and I look at each other, "Oh God. Oh, God, what have you done, Benjamin? What have you done? You've caused the game to freeze. Now we won't be able to complete this fake match between the 1993 Orioles and the 1993 Yankees. Honor is at stake, and you have messed everything up." No matter. I did what any responsible Nintendo cartridge game owner did when situations like this came up. I turned off the power, I removed the cartridge, blew in the crevice at the bottom of the cartridge, and replaced it in the video game system. Lo and behold, when I started the game back up again, all of the player names had reverted to their original settings. All of that work of the 15th year of my life, gone. Now, at that moment, I realized that I had two options. I could either become extremely upset and, throw beer bottles at Ben's head, or I could recognize that maybe this was a notification from the universe that it was time to put on the big boy pants. Because having graduated from a liberal arts college, only to move to Astoria, Queens, sit on the floor in my underwear, eat pizza, and play 11-year-old video games, was maybe not the way to seize the destiny that I had envisioned for myself. So I am proud to report that 6 years later, I am happy, healthy, still eating half pizzas at a time, still playing video game baseball, and talking nonsense into microphones at midnight on a Wednesday. So, the coda to all this is that Roberto Alomar was not selected for the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame when the baseball writers took their vote today. So, Robbie, wherever you are tonight, buddy, it's been a long road for both of us, hasn't it? Don't worry. One day, we will get the respect that we deserve.
In my solitude, I figured it out. Now I know just what the poet has been talking about. And even though he licks the pavement for gold, I see the truth in his conviction and the love in his soul. And you have no idea where I've been. You have no idea where I've been. In my depression and all of my grief, that the world does not revolve around me gives me relief. Like at the yogurt hut, a sign on the sill supports a girl's eating disorder and her everything pill. And you have no idea where I've been. You have no idea where I've been in my mind. You have no idea where I've been in my mind.
For the search for delicious.
Well, this week I was thinking about a beloved book.
Can I guess which book this is?
Yes.
Is it The Search for Delicious?
No.
Oh.
But one day we'll get to that.
Okay.
No, but it's from that era.
Okay.
It's from the, like, I'm older than a children's book, but I'm younger than a novel.
Young adult fiction,
young
I believe,
adult
is the
fiction
term.
Who is the king of young adult fiction?
Beverly Cleary.
King.
Roald Dahl.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, did I get
ding,
it right?
Ding, man. Yes. Well done. Okay. So, what would you say is the best Roald Dahl book?
The BFG.
Correct. Again, that's
wait, really?
Yeah, that's what the book I was thinking about.
I got 2 points so far.
So I was thinking about how that's such an amazing book. And I think of its sky blue cover and I get really warm and fuzzy thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I was sitting on the train trying to remember what it's actually what the plot's about. And I'm like, okay, there's this little girl and she, I feel like, has parents who like pickle gross things. Or there's a cave with like pickled boogers at some point.
Well, the BFG keeps people's dreams in jars.
Okay, there are jars.
Yeah.
And maybe her parents are like inventors or maybe they're dead.
I can't remember what the deal is with it. There's always something in Roald Dahl books about the kid's parents. But I can't remember what the deal with hers is.
So, but my point is, I realized I have no idea what the book is about. I don't remember the plot except for one very key detail that the little girl rides in his ear.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That to me is like the iconic BFG image.
That's so interesting that that's what you remember.
The concept of the little girl like nestled in his ear is like up there with the warmest.
Yeah.
Image I can think of.
Uh-huh.
But when you zoom out on that for a second, it's actually, on one hand, it's kind of like a deeply creepy, creepy, gross image. Like from the giant's perspective, he has this little tiny, it would be like having a little gnat in your ear buzzing and like all up in your ear. Gross. From her perspective, you're in a giant old man's ear with like hairs and waxy nest. So like, gross. And yet.
Right. When you're a little kid, it seems like the coolest way to travel.
Yeah. And even now as an adult. And so I was trying to think about why is it such a warm image?
Yeah.
And I think what the little girl is doing is something that we're all striving to do. She's solving this sort of like great paradox we all have as humans.
Which is
that ultimately we're all confined to our own heads.
So she's literally getting into somebody else's head?
Yeah. Like how much, I don't know, how much of our time, like how much of the human predicament is about longing to connect with someone and longing to like get closer to someone and not be alone. And yet like the cruel paradox is we are forever and always 101% stuck in our own heads. We're never going to leave. And that's a reality of physics and biology, and I'm stuck in my sack and you're stuck in your sack. And as close as we may feel, we're both alone. And as much as I might ask you what's going through your head, I can never know. I can never be inside it.
Right.
And you'll never be in my head, as much as I might try to express things to friends or family or whatever. No one's ever going to be inside there with me. I'm always alone.
Right.
And then suddenly you have the image of the BFG. This little girl, like, she's as close as it comes. From her side, she's in someone's head. And from his perspective, like, how glorious that must feel. There's someone in among his thoughts. There's someone, like, when you think about where your true self resides, it's in your thoughts. And someone's in there with him. Someone's hanging out. But then it made me think, but I think that's why I love listening to the radio.
Yeah.
No, I'm serious. Like, I was thinking, like, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a little person in your ear? And I was like, what? Literally with iPod earbuds? Like, that's what we do now. We stick little people in our ears. And, like, I'll sit on the train and listen to This American Life and just, like, there's someone in my head mixed in with my own thoughts, and it's like this house which you've lived in alone your whole life, your brain.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're letting guests in.
Well, I think that's the reason I get so frustrated to, you know, I mean, you've seen this when I'm listening to something on the train and another train goes by and all of a sudden it's just so loud that it drowns out what's in your head. It's wrecking that little
party.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if we do end up broadcasting this one, we might be in someone's ears right now.
Yep.
Hi.
Hey there.
Thanks for letting us in.
Yeah.
It's nice in here.
Just going to nestle into this nice leather chair you have here and sit here for a little while.
I'm spooning your thoughts. They're so nice.
I'm reading The New Yorker in your doubts.
I'm doing the can-can with your manic delusions.
I'm playing Xbox in your bad memories of third grade.
Your anxiety just tripped me.
Stacey J went to the American Idol audition. Simon said you suck, and Randy said you suck. Paula said you got potential to be all right. She took a long train back home that night. Camden, New Jersey. But home wasn't what Stacey J auditioned for, so she moved to Fort Greene at the age of 19. She said, I'd rather be miserable than just all right. She made her way to the open mic. But the bartender and me were the only ones listening. She played songs for lovers, I think both of them were covers. The sullen hipsters thought that she was just alright, so she said, I'm gonna drink a lot tonight. And that's what she did. So I bought her whiskey and I bought me a beer. I said, you sounded good, like she knew I would. But she didn't say anything, just sipped her drink until I fucked her senseless on the restroom sink. It was awesome. I woke the next day, knew that I was in love. Can't remember what we said as we lay in bed, but we watched shitty movies and we ordered Chinese. She never said thanks and she never said please. And I like that. Well, 6 months passed, they went just like that. Stacy moved in and we lived in sin. But now and then I see her look into a far off place. Some things in your mind you just can't erase. Like Simon Cowell ripping out your bleeding heart. So when Stacey J broke the news, I could see it coming. She said she had a dream and I had to know what that means. I drove her to the airport and I wished her luck. She said one day you'll find someone else to fuck. Oh God, I hope so. Well, Stacey J was right, and it didn't take long, and it didn't take much, so I didn't hold a grudge. But I learned a good lesson, which is when you go fishing, it's best to stay away from a beautiful musician, and the ugly ones too. But me and the new girl were doing pretty good. At least she never turns her face to a far-off place. She likes to watch shitty movies and to order Chinese. But she sometimes says thanks and she sometimes says please. and that's all right. Well, I was writing this song when I received a letter. It was Stacey J writing out from LA. She said, I hope you found someone but still think of me. And guess who you're gonna see on TV? She meant herself. So Stacey J went back to the American Idol audition. Simon said you suck, but Paula said you're great. Randy said I like your choice of song, you sound alright. He held her fate in the balance on that fateful night.
That's not a good sign.
All right. Here we are, back with our panel of distinguished experts, right here on exit 12. And as it is a new year, we have assembled a panel of distinguished experts, which is very adroit in New Year's resolution making. I won't say adhering to, because it's too early to tell. But let me introduce everybody very quickly. To my left, Mr. Alan Smith.
Good evening.
To his left, Ms. Mika Hashimoto.
Hello.
To her left, our stalwart co-host of this segment, Mr. Garrett Hall.
Howdy.
And Garrett brought his own cheering section. It sounds like they were imported directly from Super Smash Brothers. And to Garrett's left, Ms. Abby Lee.
Distinguished guest number four.
Our most distinguished guest. So everybody, the idea here is that we're all going to go around and we're going to share one or two New Year's resolutions. That's it. That is my incredibly in-depth planning for the segment today. So, Mr. Smith, why don't we begin?
I'm going to quit drinking.
No, I'm joking. I hope to, by the end of this year, have my asthma entirely under control.
Ooh.
We're going to do more sound effects here.
Really?
Hold on here, Darth. Question. Can you do that? Isn't it a medical condition of your body?
It's a medical, it's a medical condition of your body. However, through a combination of getting knocking one's lungs into shape, running and et cetera, and getting yourself so your lungs are more powerful, plus a strict regimen of drugs.
Recreational drugs or
yes.
Mostly. Okay. No, actually, so this stuff, the over the counter medication,
mm-hmm.
I find doesn't really help me.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
It allows me to survive, for which I am very, very thankful. Yeah, mm-hmm. But it doesn't actually do anything in a long term sort of a way.
Okay,
but
it's like a cough drop.
I've been doing some reading.
Yes,
I told you not to do that.
I know. Every time. So there's this herb, which allegedly, if you take it, like a couple drops of it, it really like goes a long way to prevent future asthma attacks.
Okay.
Because what asthma is, biologically, is the thickening of the blood vessels, so that you breathe in and then your the oxygen goes into your blood, but your body can't get the oxygen back out because your vessels have thickened to the point that nothing gets through them.
Hmm.
So you feel like you're suffocating, even though your lungs are full of air.
Hmm.
So this drug allegedly keeps the inflammation from happening.
Oh, okay.
If you take more than three drops of it at a time, you vomit everywhere. It's a poison. But
I recommend two drops.
Is this exactly. Is this herb peyote?
So where do you get this?
You can grow it, but also most of the hippy-dippy bourgeois health food stores around here carry it.
Cool. And what's the name of it?
I don't remember.
No, I'm going to relate.
It starts with an L.
Okay. May I recommend as the next step in your resolution, finding out the name of the
baby steps. Baby steps.
I'm going to relate here a quick story about Mr. Alan Smith from this past Monday, and then I have a follow-up question. Alan and I go into Duane Reade, where Alan has been sold a defective inhaler.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo!
Alan walks back to the pharmacy counter and says, "Excuse me, you sold me a defective inhaler. Could I please swap it for a working one?" And the person said, "No, it's fine."
They said,
question, Alan. Yes. Is this part of your New Year's part of the reason for your New Year's resolution? Well, the fact that Dwayne Reed refuses to sell you working inhalers.
It definitely plays a part. I like to think the resolution happened before this, but to be honest with us, or with ourselves, yeah. Actually, you know, a couple times recently, I've been caught without my inhaler, and I'm just like, this is really no fun. This is not a good way to go through life. And
now even if you have your inhaler, it won't work.
So does that mean you have to quit smoking?
Yeah, it does.
So
it does.
So your New Year's resolution is kind of a two-parter. It's to improve your physical fitness regimens to come more in line with things that would be healthy for your asthma, and also to start partaking of this mystery drug.
To launch into a homeopathic treatment regime.
Gotcha.
That gets me weaned off of the over-the-counter drugs, which are probably by this point, like, doing some serious damage to my body.
Okay. Really?
I mean, it's a steroid. Mm-hmm. I've been on it for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I should point out at this juncture that Alan Smith has biceps the size of softballs.
Giant
<He's>
forehead.
Huge. <He's>
His purple veins throbbing. Anyway. Okay. Mika, New Year's resolutions?
I think for the next 52 weeks, one day a week, I would like to lock myself up in a room and turn off my cell phone and disconnect myself from the internet and write.
I don't understand.
Yeah. So,
can we go back to the internet part? I didn't know.
Okay, so.
Did you say disconnect?
Unplug. Try to have no contact with another human being, electronically or otherwise, and kind of just focus on writing.
How often?
One evening a week.
One evening.
I love New York. I love the people who are here. And I find that one of the things that has been more and more difficult for me to do is to say no to invitations, to dinners, just sure. Hanging out.
Yeah.
And it's become, it's gotten to a point where I really want to make a resolution to myself to say, you know what? I also need time for myself. It's not the city that allows you a lot of that.
Yeah, yeah. That I feel like is, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but that's like one of the central paradoxes of New York to me is that it's a place where you, it affords you all of these opportunities, and there are so many opportunities to take advantage of that you often take advantage of so many of them that you kind of forget yourself and why you would even want to be here in the first place.
Yeah.
I think that's an amazing New Year's resolution.
I think it would help me to keep me a little bit more sane. But because I think that, well, for myself, I do need time for self-reflection and also just to kind of not have any obligation to another person.
Right. Right. Now, it's Wednesday, so we are halfway through the first week of the new year. Have you taken your evening of solitude
Absolutely
yet?
Absolutely not. Why would I do that?
Would tonight have been your evening of solitude and I've mucked it up? No.
I think that ideally I can do it in the next day or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's by no means saying I'm going to take the entire evening off. If something happens at 10 that I'd like to be at, by all means, I will go. But just a couple of hours every week to have a little bit of alone time is something that I think is really important.
May I ask you this, and I hope you do not mind me revealing this to the listeners. It can be edited out, as you know. But you are going to be a published author, if that is
yes,
fine
that
for me
is,
to say.
That is correct.
Which is awesome and fantastic.
Wow.
Would you say that a regimen similar to what you were describing that you would like to pursue this year, did you have to follow something similar to that to get yourself through hurdles to get this particular project finished? Or is it something where you wish you had done more of that while you were working on that project?
It's something that I think, is a regiment that's actually truncated from the extent to which I worked on the manuscript when I first moved to the city. I moved to New York 2 years ago and decided to spend the first couple of months not looking for a job, but working on this story that I had in my head and had been working on for about 8 months. And so every day I would, I found a cafe that was really great close to my apartment, and every day I would go and write for 6 to 8 hours, and it was absolutely wonderful. At that time, I had a pretty small social circle. I didn't buy the monthly metro pass, so I wasn't going to the city every day, which does cut back on commute time. And I really wanted to focus on just the writing, and that meant a lot of time by myself, and I loved it. But then I found, or I eventually got a job at Random House in their children's department, and since then it turned really hard in my ability to set that time to work.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
So about 2 weeks ago, I got my first official editorial letter that includes 2 pages, single space, of notes about the big ideas in the manuscript. And then I also got the story itself, complete with many red pen marks that I kind of looked at 2 days ago. And maybe that is what prompted this resolution that may not have been made on the first of the month, but maybe two nights ago. The editorial process will probably take another 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. And I think that committing to spending time by myself focused on it will really help me get it to the place where it needs to be.
Yeah.
Did they change the editorial flow a lot? Did they change the story flow?
The main character is now a dragon.
Yes. A purple dragon with beady eyes. Yes.
Sounds like my kind of book.
It's about food. It's about cake.
Abby is actually the one who edited your manuscript.
More dragons. More purple dragons.
The main bent
this
of the story
is... picture of a dragon.
It's not going to be much changed, but there are certainly places where the editor wants me to open up kind of different places and people and expand on the world that I've created. So I'm really excited about it. She's a great editor. She has sound comments that I agree with.
She wants you to expand?
She wants me to get
That's
bigger. And you know?
Yeah. Wow. 9 out of 100, I feel like. This has got to go. Cut this. That's awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to further developing this world.
Yeah.
But it will take time and it will take commitment. So.
Cool.
Yep.
Mr. Hall?
Yes.
I believe you were mentioning to me the other day that you do not make resolutions.
No. See, the problem with the resolution is that you're setting yourself up for the possibility of failure.
Right.
I'm going to make New Year's decisions. The thing is, with a New Year's resolution, come the end of January, you've probably fallen off the wagon already.
That's so pessimistic.
I've fallen off the wagon and it's 6 days in. So.
But if you make a New Year's decision, it's set in stone from the moment you decide. There's no possibility for failure.
Ah. So it's kind of a semantical trick to keep your resolve.
There we go, but no resolve necessary.
Right, because it's not a resolution.
Exactly. So I don't need to be resolute.
Just tell Garrett he's made a resolution.
I just say this is what's going to happen, and it's going to happen.
What was your New Year's decision?
To mess with the English language a little bit. Find more loopholes.
I see. You picked a resolution/decision that you could accomplish in one day. Did you make any other New Year's decisions?
Well, essentially, I'd felt like things were going pretty good. So my New Year's decisions were largely just kind of like, oh, I need to remember to do this, you know, first week back, bring my laundry in, done.
Nice.
You know, make sure I email this person. Happened.
Boom.
It's almost more like a schedule than resolutions.
2010 on its way.
Exactly.
So would it be fair to say that your New Year's decision, in addition to messing with the English language,
mm-hmm.
your New Year's decision was to rededicate yourself to the things you feel like you're already doing well?
That's a good way of putting it.
You or follow a calendar.
That way he'll never be disappointed. Himself. He's already doing what he set out to do.
Yeah. Well, the biggest decision, however, that I made is pretty similar, actually, to Amika's. It came out of this thing. You and I both took acting one with Lee Devon way back in the day.
It's true.
At Swarthmore.
Mm-hmm.
I think, maybe it was Roger Babb. One of them had this amazing concept where if you wanted to be a better writer, the idea was just for 5 minutes a day, pull out like a Moleskine journal and stream of consciousness, write as much as you can.
That was Lee Devon.
Lee Devon, okay.
Yeah.
And I did it for a year, and it was amazing. Because in the beginning, you start writing, and you're like, today I ate a taco, and it was delicious. And you don't really know what to do for the five minutes.
In that voice.
Which is connoted on the paper by slightly squigglier lines.
Microsoft actually has three settings, italics, bold, and that voice.
And it was great. And after a year, I found, it was like I had a seamless link between my hand and my brain when I was trying to write. By the end, it would there wasn't any question of how you write. You just come up with an idea and you sit down and it appears again.
Yeah.
So I have not been writing for a while, but I want to pick that up again, where I spend 5 minutes a day just putting pen to paper.
That's awesome. I think it was it Lee also who had, I think this, I've always in my head attributed this to Lee, but the idea that that plan of doing the thing for 5 minutes a day was in service of this idea that if you want to master something, you have to do it for 10,000 hours.
Yes.
And if you do it for 10,000 hours, you will become a master at it.
Right.
And that 5 minutes a day thing was his way of being like, now 10,000 hours doesn't mean you have to do an hour a day for 10,000 days. Mm-hmm. It means that you have to do it for 5 minutes a day for the rest of your life.
Right. Just do it is the idea.
I'm so close in oblivion.
Speaking of magical herbs, Ms. Lee.
Oh, all right. Resolutions.
Yes.
Decisions, please.
Decisions. Apologize.
No room for failure here.
Okay. I just want to learn to take care of myself. And that sounds like a really simple thing to do. And I think that's what sort of resolutions are generally about. But if you've never thought about that ever in your life, it's a new perspective. So I think my resolution is more of a perspective change.
Nice. I like this.
Women, as it turns out, are programmed socially to take care of other people. And if you asked me to take care of someone who was particularly needy or a child, I could do that expertly.
Let the record show, when she was saying needy and child, she was looking at me.
That's right.
I don't know why.
I keyed into something.
Continue.
Yes. So turning it on me, and I think I'm completely inept at taking care of myself, which includes even knowing that, for example, you were saying to know that you would like to write for one evening, to know that it's completely not even in my grasp to think about myself at all. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take care of myself.
Okay.
Because people are out there, and they will just take. Everyone will take from you, whether it's the city being trying to get you more involved, which is good. You should be involved in the city's happenings and the pulse of America. but that's. I think that's just
fake
endless.
America.
I think events will happen, and friendships will happen, and I think. One has to ask oneself. I have to ask myself what I need to survive to thrive.
That's a good way of putting it.
Survive to thrive.
Survive to thrive. Now, if you would not mind me asking this, can you think of one specific area where you feel like you have been critically wanting in paying attention to your own needs? For example, Garrett was bringing up laundry earlier. Yesterday, I bought 3 pairs of boxer briefs rather than do my laundry. Not proud of it, but it's the truth. They were American Apparel, by the way. They were very schnezu. Is there like a particular area that you want to start in?
Well, I think going from a place.
All right, settle down. Settle
sorry.
Down.
Boxers from American Apparel creates an image.
Also, schnezu.
There's no other way to describe them.
I think I'm going from a place of not paying attention to myself at all to completely paying attention to myself. I think I've now erred on the side of self-indulgence, like massaging, drinking, festivities,
nice.
Everything.
Hedonism.
And that's not really taking care of yourself.
No?
No.
What? Shit.
It's not. Having 3 meals a day.
I gotcha.
Working out. Doing the things I need to do for myself financially.
Gotcha.
And for my career. Mm-hmm. On a daily basis. Doing the things I don't want to do that are good for me. That's taking care of yourself.
That's such a good way of putting it. Doing the things that you don't want to do but are good for you.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I feel like there's such a difference between I'm going to start thinking about myself. And it's very easy to interpret that as like, I'm going to go ahead and buy those pairs of American Apparel underwear that I've had my eye on.
Go to the Caribbean.
Like, oh, I'm going to go to the Caribbean. Yeah. But that's not really taking care of yourself. That's like spoiling yourself.
That's delaying the inevitable.
I actually think that a painful but effective way of learning how to take care of yourself is to catch hypothermia. So I was...
Explain?
I was in a wilderness first aid course, and among the things that you learn is how to treat patients who catch hypothermia. And her hypothermia is often characterized by decreased judgment, slow movement, just not being able to take care of yourself when you need to the most. And the instructor said, what you need to do is stop thinking of yourself as a human, but start thinking of yourself as an animal. Say, I am a human animal. What do I need? I need warmth. I need food. I need shelter. I need water. And...
Or cream drum.
Or cream drum. And it's interesting when you actually encounter your body in a high stress situation, kind of going back to the basics and saying, what do I need at this moment to keep me alive?
And it's interesting that you... this all came out as a result of someone getting hypothermia. It's like, what's it going to take for you to be able to take care of yourself?
Yeah.
Like, do you have to get hypothermia to like know that you need to listen to your body, to yourself?
Hopefully not.
Right. Right.
It's a lesson that you can learn in a very physical, visceral way, but it would be preferable not to have to learn it.
Right.
Deeply.
I think we're selling hedonism, massaging. I don't know.
No, but I think Abby raised a really good point. Is like there are these points in your life where you realize like, wow, I've really let it get to this point, haven't I?
Right.
You know. For example,
how bad does it have to get?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For me, with the boxer briefs, I was like, I don't mean to keep giving people the image of me wearing boxer briefs, but now it's there, so go ahead. But it was like,
if only a dedicated fan would draw that. Shy,
are you listening? But it was like, and this is obviously not as grave as hypothermia, but I was like, I smell like a homeless person. And not in one of those ways where like I was noticing people were getting up and moving away from me on the subway, and it's like
really,
but it well yes, unfortunately
guilty.
Garrett was one of them.
I led the exodus.
Follow me. You do not have to deal with this. But it was one of those things where it was like you're sitting there and you're like, really? I'm 27 years old. I'm 27 years old, and people are getting up to move away from me on the subway. That's insane.
You've achieved that guy status.
Yeah. It was like you've become that guy. And it's
you
one of those
things.
You know
you're in a really secure relationship when.
And thank God for the loo. But no, but it is one of those things where you kind of, like, you kind of say to yourself, man, good work.
But taking care of yourself also includes not admonishing yourself for doing the things you, quote, should do.
Oh, I like this part. That's exactly right. Instead of just like hitting yourself, you go, okay, I could change this situation.
Yeah.
Cool. Or blame someone.
Or blame someone.
Chris Dodd.
It is Chris Dodd that I've
Too
meant.
Soon.
Damon?
Oh, okay. I have two New Year's resolutions. One is black coffee, because I've always had
to drink more of it.
Well,
learn to like that over the souped up kind.
Yeah, learn to like black coffee instead of coffee with milk and two sugars. Oh. Because I was realizing that if I have at least one cup of coffee every day, and in that cup of coffee go at least two packets of sugar and milk. So I was realizing if I switch to black coffee, that will be 700 packets of sugar that I have not had.
At a minimum.
At a minimum. And it could be more.
Only one cup of coffee, really?
Well, usually. Wow.
Half and half.
Here's my suggestion.
Fat-free half and half has no sugar.
here's my suggestion. Get really good coffee for a while.
Well, that's
really good coffee.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought at first, and that's what I did at first. Because I started when I was at home in Virginia. I went to this place called St. Elmo's, and they have, you know, they make their own coffee or whatever. And
wait,
it was
they grow their own coffee?
Make their own coffee. They might grow it too,
probably.
Roast.
Ah, okay.
It has their name on it.
They pour the Folgers into your cup.
They purport to roast their own coffee.
All right.
Well done.
So I had it, and I was like, okay, this isn't so bad. But then I realized part of the reason that I want to be able to switch to black coffee is because I don't want to be – a lot of times you're in situations where, like, I don't know, you're driving really late at night and you need to stay awake, and the only places that are open are, you know, like – crappy little like gas stations that might not have all the fixins that you want, or you go to somebody's house and they offer you a cup of coffee and you don't want to be the one person who goes, actually, do you have some milk and sugar? I can't
really. That would be so rude. You would hate to be that one person.
I guess that's a bad
shame.
example.
Shame.
But actually, a better way of thinking about it is this. I'm trying to think about it like the first time I tasted beer, I could not stand the flavor of it. Mm. Now I love it. And I love the taste of Bud Light and PBR, and I love the taste of Dogfish Head IPA, you know? Yeah. And I would like to be able to feel the same way about coffee. Like, I would like to be able to get coffee at the mobile station in a styrofoam cup and be, like, good to go, just as much as I would like to be able to get Stumptown coffee from Oregon and appreciate its finer characteristics.
I still think that the way to go is to break yourself in with really, really good coffee.
Yeah.
Because then your palate adjusts to it not being something that's incredibly sweet while it still tastes good.
Mm.
And then you can revert to the crap, and it will be like the shadows on the wall of Plato's cave. Once you know what you're trying to get, your body will take the crappy coffee and be like, I understand what this coffee is aspiring to be, so I can accept it.
I think it's funny that you want to broaden your taste bud horizon so that you can tolerate shitty.
Yeah, I didn't really dive too deep into the psychology behind it. But
dive too deep, though. I'm going to disagree with Alan. I think rather than wade in, mm-hmm. you should dive right in and...
Well, that is admittedly the way that I've been pursuing it so far, is to be like just throw myself into the
but not by
coffee water.
But not by only getting bad coffee, but just by whatever happens to be there getting.
That is the way I've been approaching it.
The argument for that, and this is based on personal experience, is that really bad coffee can turn you off to black coffee
right.
in a way that really bad coffee with cream and sugar you don't really notice. Mm-hmm.
That's true. That's
for
true.
A while, I didn't know what good coffee was and mm-hmm. drank coffee black and was like, ugh.
Isn't black coffee bad for you? For your tummy? Don't you need...
It's more acidic, certainly.
No.
But doesn't this, I mean,
well,
if
I mean,
you're just drinking black coffee, yes, but you should eat things too.
That right. I'm not giving up.
Right. How do you feel about coffee with just milk?
That I don't want to do, because I've tried it as like a way of like weaning myself, and then it just kind of tasted like oily milk.
Gross.
Right.
That's how I drink my coffee.
Well, but this is coming from somebody who has basically been like drinking a cup of coffee ice cream every day for 2 years. Or every day for my, not more than 2 years, like a really long, you know. So I kind of felt like if I was gonna, I have found in my life, I guess, that for change to happen, I have to like do things cold turkey. Because otherwise I don't possess the resolve to take baby steps. I kind of just have to, like, for better or for worse, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but I kind of have to just like throw myself at the wall. So we'll see. I mean, I do think that, I mean, right now it's day, what, today's the 6th?
Yes.
So it's day 6 of this experiment, and my resolve is critically weak. I mean, I've had black coffee all 6 days of the new year, and but it's like every time, every new sip I take, it's like I don't think I can do this again. And I think in the long run, I still think that's the that's the way to do it, because I think at a certain point, like, I think this is the hard part, you know, and it's like, eventually I'm going to get past this, and then I'll start to be like, oh, this isn't so bad. Oh, this isn't so bad. And then I'll be able to work myself up to nice coffee, and I'll be like, wow, black coffee is actually really delicious. That said, I don't think my resolve would be so low if I had done it the way Alan is suggesting. So
I don't like your New Year's resolution.
Well, that's right. Just, well, one of
has,
two.
He has
another
you.
One. He has another I'll one. Tell you about my other one. My other one is always go for the hug.
Yes.
Right?
That's a great
That's
resolution.
Great. Mm-hmm.
So this is how it works. We've all been in this situation where you are talking to somebody. Let's leave out somebody who you know really well. But it's somebody who you either don't know that well, or you're just meeting for the first time, but you feel like you guys have kind of really hit it off.
Chris Dodd.
Take Chris Dodd as an example.
For example.
Actually, Chris Dodd is a horrible example.
No. You got to hug Chris.
Well, he needs a hug these days.
He does.
But so you're talking to somebody who you don't know that well, or you're just meeting for the first time, but you guys have really hit it off. And it comes to be the end of the conversation. And what I always do is, no matter what, because I don't want people to think I'm being too forward, and I find that I especially do this with women, I don't want them to think I'm being too forward or aggressive, so I shake hands. And I find that it always, I hadn't noticed it for a long time, but there's this, it would always introduce this sort of tiny imperceptible sour note into the end of the interaction. It's like, well, it was good to have this professional discussion with you. Like, what? What? You know, like,
it's also crucial, like, on the second and third times you see somebody.
Yeah.
Who you had a connection with before, but then time has lapsed.
Right. Right. And I always had felt like, you know, it would be weird if I hugged this person right now, and then had left the interaction feeling like it probably would have been less weird because we were just getting along so well, and then I like inserted like an ice cube into our interaction. So instead, I feel like always go for the hug, because if it's not weird, then it's a kind of like a way of putting like an exclamation point at the end of a really great interaction. And if it is a little bit forward, the worst the person is going to think is, wow, Sam's really affectionate.
Well, 1 in 1,100 times you're going to get knee in the testicles.
as long as
you can accept that.
I actually think that your resolution is good on the second meeting of a person that you've connected with.
Okay.
And greeting them with a hug instead of a handshake. If you are only meeting a person for the first time, I feel like hugs are something that you need a little bit more.
Okay. No, I understand that. So you think I should go for it at the beginning of
the second meeting.
The second meeting.
Yes.
I have an idea. Go for the hug, and slip into their back pocket, if they have a back pocket, the
what?
The URL to this podcast. So if they think it's weird, then they'll go home and listen to the podcast and realize it was just Sam's New Year's resolution.
Right. Just to clear up.
And they'll be like, oh, I should have kneed him in the testicles.
That's what I'll do. I'll create a separate page on the website that says, did you get a weird note from Sam?
Just been hugged by Sam? I care.
And then I'll play just this signal thing.
Well, I think then basically what you're saying is that if there's ever any doubt, you go for the hug. Like if there's a question mark.
That's a better way of putting it. Yes. If there's ever a question as to like, should I hug this person right now? Then just go ahead and do it. Because I feel like the worst they're going to say is, okay.
What about in a work context?
I arrived for the first day in more than a year at the Brian Lehrer show today.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Very exciting. And I walked up to Brian and he offered me his hand and I took it and turned it into a hug.
Nice.
And it went perfectly.
Boom. Thank you.
Boom.
Brilliant. That is living proof that this resolution is a good idea. Cool. All right, everybody.
All right.
I think that's about all the time we have on Vital Topics this evening. Thank you guys so much for sharing your resolutions / decisions / what was the other one?
Perspectives.
/ aims / courages / dauntlessnesses, decidednesses, decisions, declarations, dedications, doggedness, earnestness, energy, firmness, fixed purpose, fortitude, guts, heart, immovability, intent, perseverance, pluck, purpose, purposefulness, purposeness, relentlessness, relentlessness, resolve, settlements,
breathe, edit, Alan, you've got
tenacity, voting, and willpower.
If you couldn't guess what was just happening, Alan was reading synonyms for resolutions on his Verizon Droid.
Droid.
Oh, that's another New Year's resolution is to buy zero cell phones.
See, that won't last till the end of January.
God damn it. All right. Happy 2010 to all of you. And thank you so much for coming on.
All right.
I wish I was a dynamic public speaker. People would come from all around the world. They would run, they tell their friends, Matt Singer is speaking in public again. The most dynamic public speaker in the motherfucking world. I wish I could bone for hours without stopping. Bitches would come from all around the world. They tell their friends, hey, check it out, I think he's gonna whip it out. The most amazing dong you've ridden in the motherfucking world. It's all a big charade, and I calm my senses down, down, down with a glass of lemonade. Oh baby, I'm a wholesome lover. It's all a masquerade, and I calm my senses down, down, down with a glass of lemonade. Oh baby, I'm a wholesome lover. It's all a big charade, and I calm my senses down, down, down with a glass of lemonade. Oh baby, I'm a wholesome lover. It's all a masquerade, my art was really truly brilliant. Critics would come from all around the world. They'd say it's brilliant, it's a fact. John Lennon, that fucking hack. The most dynamic public speaker with the most amazing dong. The most brilliant goddamn artist in the motherfucking world.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I do not know our wizened archivist Grover T. Boswell's actual age. He does not reveal that information, and I am legally required to not ask. So, and also to not fire him on account of various age concerns, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, he has seen more New Year's
than you or I combined, which is why we turn to him now for some New Year's wisdom on another edition of All's Well with Boswell.
Hello, this is G.T. Boswell on the road to Shambhala. It is the new year, 2010. Maybe this year we will meet the aliens. I hope so. Do you know how they say hello in England? It is allo governor. I told him I was not the governor. He was George Patakis. But he did not listen. I decided to use papers again so I can see what I am saying. That is because these eyes, or peepers, aren't as sharp as they used to be. I wear spectacles. I wear glasses. I hope you will have a Goodyear tire for your car. They are the best rubber in my experience. That is the end. Good night, and good luck, and good New Year's.
And there it goes, exit 12 on the road to Shambhala. Thank you so much for downloading us once again this week, ladies and gentlemen. It was good to be back with you in our traditional format, such as it is. Very extra special thanks to all of our wonderful guests this week. Mr. Matt Singer, playing some hilarious and lovely songs. You can check out his music on the internets at www.matt-singer.com. And you can see him live and in action with our previous musical guest on Exit 11, Chris Cubetta and the Liars Club, at Union Hall right here in Brooklyn, New York, on January 29th. So get on out there and see Matt Singer right with Chris Cubetta and the Liars Club. And then, if you're feeling spunky, on the next night, January 30th, at City Winery, also right here in New York City, you can see Virginia Coalition, who provide our intro and outro music every week and are, as you have heard many times, the awesomest. So, that is the music situation. And what else? Thank you so much to all of our wonderful guests, Alan Smith, Mika Hashimoto, Garrett Hall, and Abby Lee, for sharing their New Year's resolutions / decisions / whatever. And also to the Lou for returning with another fantastic installment of The Search for Delicious. Also, Grover T. Boswell, busting out his papers once again to keep his insights at the top of their game. And as always, please feel free to email us at shambhalaradio@gmail.com or to call us at 909-SHAZAPS if you have any thoughts or feedback on the show. I hope you have enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed making it for you. I must tell you that it is copyright 2010 Bright Machine Productions and was recorded and edited right here at Stuck Between Studios in Brooklyn, New York. In the words of the inimitable John Miller and the immortal Dr. Bob Frapples, swing hard in case you hit it. And they are not all going to be home runs.